I tell people that Fights is a love letter to kids who were like me growing up.
This is Joel Christian Gill, an associate professor at MassArt and author and illustrator of the graphic novel called Fights, One Boy's Triumph Over Violence. Gill, like Mimi Bull, tells a story of a difficult childhood out of his control and his journey to wholeness as a Black man. He joined us in February, before our latest national conversation on race had begun.
I wrote this because I wanted people to look past what kids, how kids act out, and see who kids really are, because you never know what's happening in a kid's life. And I think it's really important. Somebody said this to me, and I think it's really profound, but be the adult that you needed as a kid. And I think that's what I wanted people to see when they read the book. I wanted them to see what it was like for me to go through what I went through and have sparing sort of contact with people who could help me.
What is it that you want people to know you went through?
I mean, I went through sexual abuse, emotional abuse. There was a number of different things that, you know, like teachers were bullies, racism, toxic masculinity, you know, like having to fight all the time like I did. Like, one of the things I think is really interesting is when I first started writing Fights, I thought of myself as the victim of these things. And then I talked to some people that I knew as kids, and they were like, you know, you were that guy I was afraid of. I wouldn't come outside if you were there. And it made me really realize, like, kids who are dealing with these kind of things don't have much power. And they're acting out. That's what I was doing, right? I was acting out because I didn't have any power or control over my life. And so this, you know, like thinking about how Fights works, you know, every chapter is about a fight I got into as a kid. And I wanted to show you just like the fight might have been the thing that most people saw, but there was a lot of other stuff going on behind the scenes.
I'm so sorry all that happened.
Oh, it's, you know, it's fine. I have years of therapy. I am absolutely good. I like who I am now. You know, I love my children. I love my family. And my life as it stands right now is really fantastic. So, you know, looking back on it and wanting anything to change means that I would want something about my life to be different now. And I don't. But I don't want anybody else to have to go through that to get to where I am now.
You say you like who you are now.
Yes.
How do you feel about the kid who's in the book?
Oh, I love that kid. I mean, that's the kid that I think, like, I want to save. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I do.
That's the kid that I want to save.
And what does he need to be saved from?
He needs connections. He needs people to have empathy. He needs people to look at him and not see the thing that he's doing at the moment. Sociopaths and psychopaths are rare. And so when you look at what's happening to, you know, Black and brown children, or just poor children in general, because this happens to white kids too, but Black and brown children, and how the, you know, school to prison pipeline is picking up, and like people are looking at kids and just thinking they're bad kids, it's like you don't know what's happening.
The kid in the book, the younger you, talks about this fire and talks about fire a lot. And one of the things that's striking to me about the kid in the book is that he actually does choose to try to control that fire. And he tries to make better decisions with it, but then the people around him let him down and make terrible decisions.
Exactly.
Every time.
And that's what I mean. Like, if you focus on something that you can control, it might be small and it might seem insignificant, but eventually you will be able to control other things. Like, there's the scene in the book where I pierce my own ear. That's a thing I can control. I can keep kids from making fun of me and keep the teachers from making fun of me if it's real, right? Like, they can't take that away from me. That's what I'm trying to say about the book, is find places where you can make some decisions as a kid, and then use those to bolster your decision-making skills.
There was this moment when I was reading it, my kid's going to kill me. I have a 14-year-old son. And there's a moment in the book where you talk about sort of the overwhelming focus on girls and how.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm reading that. And I'm thinking, oh.
Yeah, girls, like, it's really interesting because, you know, I have a son now who's 17, and having conversations with him, and he's just like, yeah, I have a girlfriend. You know, whatever. Like, it's not a thing. But for me at the time, and for my friends, it was like all encompassing.
All consuming.
It was everything. It was the only reason to do anything. If there were girls there, why would you go over there? Because there's girls there. That mall has more girls at it. There's a party. There are going to be girls there. And looking back on it, it was clear to me that girls were just a medicine for something that we couldn't. It was just another thing that we couldn't control. And we were just sort of like, this. At least this feels good, right? Like, at least this thing feels good. And everything else can suck. And everything else can be bad, but at least this thing is okay. The reason that I think it's odd is because when I look back on that, and talking to my kids, they're not the same. Like, my kids have a great life. We live in the country. They have a pool and two parents who come to games and do what they're supposed to and, like, and there all the time.
You're the adult that you wanted.
I am the adult that I wanted as a kid. And they don't have the same issues. So, of course, they don't have the same sort of, like, dysfunctions I had as a teenager.
There were so many times when I was reading the book where I thought, what did it cost him to write this book, to draw this book?
It's funny. Like, when I first did this and I was first working on Fights, I felt like every time I talked to my editor, I would cry.
Okay.
It's like this, just like, I'm like, just be ready to cry. And I think the more I've talked about it, I mean, and mostly it wasn't the painful stuff. It was more like the happy stuff that makes me cry when I think about Fights. Like, thinking about my kids will make me cry. Thinking about how kind Mr. Charles, who's the man in the book, will make me cry. Like, that kind of stuff. Because it's like those were islands where everything else sucked. Everything else was terrible. And then there was this one little thing that was good. So in the beginning of this, I was fine. And then there would be things that would hit me and I hadn't thought about for years. But it was mostly happy things, like discovering chocolate sandwiches when I was a kid, which is something that people eat in Europe all the time. But for me, it was what happens when on January you have a birthday party and on February you have no groceries. So, and the only thing we have is icing and some bread. So you eat chocolate sandwiches. And it sounds like a terrible thing, but it was great.
It actually like sounds delicious.
When I was eight, it was like amazing.
The word Fights is in the title, and you've already said that every chapter is basically built around some fight that you got into when you were young. At the beginning of our conversation, you said, somebody said to you, I remember you, you're the guy I was scared of. One of these two, either when did you stop wanting to be the guy other people were scared of, or when did you stop being the guy other people were scared of?
So there's a scene in the book where I'm on the bus and there's a kid whose name is Billy, and he was a friend of mine, and he's an amalgam of a couple people, and somebody's picking on him on the bus, and I stand up and say, you should stop. It's weird to think that at like 12, I had this like epiphany that you shouldn't, if you're bigger than people, you shouldn't fight them. It wasn't a reaction to things that had happened to me. It was just me seeing something happen to him and realizing that I had been that kid and that was no longer what I wanted to be.
So that's young.
Yeah, it was really young. I'm 6 feet tall, so I got pretty tall pretty quick, which afforded me the ability to not have to worry about things a little bit sometimes.
You also talk at one point about chess, and you say chess became my favorite way to fight.
Yes.
So, just tell us a little more about that.
So when I was, being a 6 foot tall, you know, as big as I am, people always say, did you play football? No, I got a varsity letter in chess in high school. Like, I would spend hours at that kid's house playing chess. And then when we moved to the city, I joined the chess club and played chess all the time. And it was just, I don't know, like, chess, like, took over my life at points. Like, in my head, it took over my life. And you read this book and you're like, how did chess take over your life and all this other stuff? I mean, it was just another thing to distract me from the world. I remember there was a time when I had to go to Virginia Beach to a chess tournament, and it snowed right before that. And I was crossing the street, and my mind immediately thought of the car as a bishop and me as the rook, and the bishop was going to take the rook if I, like, crossed the street. I mean, it was really kind of crazy.
You were in deep.
I was deep. I was in deep in chess. I don't play chess. Like, I probably play twice, two or three times a year, but when I, like, that was back then, I played all the time. Anytime I could.
One of the things that struck me about that is so much of this book is about what's happening to and with your body, whether it's the sexual abuse or the hunger or the fighting.
Yeah.
But chess happens entirely in your brain. And it was as if watching at some point in your life, all that energy moved up out of your body and into your brain. Now, maybe I'm projecting as a reader.
No, that's actually a really good way to think about it, because one of my influences for this book is Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, and mostly because he's around the same age as I am, and he's from, you know, Baltimore, and I'm from southwestern Virginia. And so a lot of the things he said in that book were like things that I had never thought about in the way that I'd never thought about it. And he says over and over again, you know, like, as a black man in America, or as being black in America, is like constantly protecting your body. And I think it was really, I got really early on, I just decided that that thinking was better than fighting.
So your friend Mike, who is one of the real people from the book, who is serving life incarceration for double murder.
Double murder.
Why were you able to stop fighting and Mike wasn't?
I don't know. And I've never asked him. I always say that my wife saved my life. Like getting married and deciding to get married the way we did, that little choice, right? It was like a little choice, like just to say yes, right? And that changed things dramatically. And then there were choices to make along the way, like you can't do the things you did. You can't run with the same people. There was a period right after I got married where Mike was walking through the projects and got jumped by like 9 people. And he was stabbed and he ended up in the hospital. And I remember thinking right after that happened, because we weren't hanging out at the time, and I remember thinking that if I hadn't been married, I would have been with him. I mean, there's also like my dad was gone, so he became a saint. So he became this thing to live up to, whereas Mike's dad was just absent. And he just became another dude who wasn't coming around. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of like little tiny things that along the way, I think that for me were different for Mike.
The word triumph. So it's fights. One boy's triumph over violence. Is this a triumph story, a survivor story, a trauma story, a hero story?
So talk
about that a little bit.
It is the story of, I don't know if I'd say it's the hero story, right? It's not like I have to accept something and go out and change the world and come back, right? So it's probably not the hero's journey, but it is a triumph. Like, you know, you're watching this and you can see fighting all the time and you can see like finally there's peace, right? That's like a moment where it's just like there's no more fighting. And there's a surviving story because like at the end of the book, I'm like, you know, like you can see I'm not in prison. I'm not beaten down. I've got these kids and things are, you know, like things are looking up. I'm going to school. Things are looking better. It was one of the things that when I was talking to the publisher about selling the book originally, that was probably one of the times that I did when I was crying, like I was like got emotional. It was like, where's the redemption in the story? And I said, the redemption is me. Like, I am, like, right here sitting in front of you. Like, this person who's not in prison, who's not a menace to society, this person who is, like, I pay my taxes, I contribute to the church, and, you know, I help my mom cross the street, little old ladies cross the street. Like, I do all the things that you're supposed to do as a good person. I mean, and I think that's the thing. It's like, as a kid learning, we all have base instincts. I think that's the way you are a good person. Recognizing that. Mostly we're not, right? We always want to, like, you want to smack the person. You want to smack that person for doing this.
You want to flip over that table.
Yeah, you want to flip over the table. You want to curse out the guy that, you know, that cut you off. And I think once you recognize that that's the issue, then you can control it. And it sounds really crazy, and I'm sure people will disagree with me, but I think we're just all, like, we are all bad, right? And that's what makes us good is when we choose not to be. We don't give in to those things. We don't give in to the basest instincts that we have. We make different decisions because that's what sets us apart from animals. And that means that we make active decisions and active choices as opposed to being the byproduct of everybody else's choices.
Joel Christian Gill is an associate professor at MassArt and creator of the graphic novel Fights, One Boy's Triumph Over Violence. We spoke back in February. Stay with us for a short break, because when we come back, we'll hear some music from a time when we could still go to live music shows. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is a Labor Day edition of Radio Boston.